I went to the store, I bought the ingredients, I'm at home, I'm in the kitchen, I'm like boiling sugar. It like exploded in the oven, and then I tried the microwave, of course, you know, plan B. Why would I clean up the oven when I could just use a microwave?
Where was your mom and dad at this point in time to recommend maybe not the microwave?
Banging their heads against walls.
They just were watching?
Like, please stop, Alina. But I wasn't going to stop. They knew I wasn't going to stop.
I believe that each and every one of us has the power within ourselves to create the life that we really want. And I want to help give you the tools to make that happen. I'm Danica Patrick, and I'm pretty intense. Today, I talked to Alina Morse, who is a 14-year-old business mogul. She has a multi-million dollar company called Zollipops. She had an idea when she was 7 years old, to create a lollipop that was actually good for your teeth instead of bad for your teeth. And, you know, sure enough, then by the age of 9, she was already on TV and the product was on the shelves, which is amazing. It's now in 25,000 stores. She is a fascinating young girl. She's very mature. I see a lot of myself in her. She is, we talked about how her life has changed. We talk about the dynamics at school now. We talked about the family dynamic because essentially she employs her parents. So we talked about a lot of really heavy topics for a 14-year-old, but I wouldn't have gone there if I didn't think she could handle it. Please enjoy this show. So I wanted to start off by asking you about your idea binder that you had when you were 3 years old. I mean, I can't even remember being 3 years old, but you had an idea binder. Is this right?
Yes, I had an idea binder where I kept all of my great inventions from ages like 3 to 7. I still have it, but
what's in it?
You know, lots of product ideas that, you know, had probably already been invented, but, you know, I was like, oh, I'm being so original. Like, I wanted to put like peanut butter and jelly in the same jar. And then I got like really upset when I found out it was already a thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't believe like they would steal my idea like this. It's preposterous.
What else?
I had an idea when I was probably 4 or 5. It was, you know, pretty soon after my dad read me the book Rich Dad Poor Dad. And my dad had worked as a business consultant, you know.
Wait, how old are you now?
14.
You're 14?
Yes.
And your dad read you the book?
Yes, when I was 4 or 5. And
interesting choice. I was getting the line, The Witch in the Wardrobe, but anyway. And then I'd sit there and my mom would go, are you sleeping? I'm like, no, Mom, I'm just resting my eyes. And I hate reading.
Well, so, you know, after he kind of read me that book, I was definitely intrigued in the world of, you know, entrepreneurship and helping people through business, which was an important lesson in that book. And, you know, I grew up with my dad traveling a lot. He was a business consultant. And, you know, like the thing I wanted most in the world, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to create a robot daddy. And it's going to be a robot that goes to work for my dad so he can stay home and he doesn't have to travel and he doesn't have to do anything. If he can stay home and he can play with me. And
you kind of manifested that on some level.
Yeah. I held him captive until he helped me create a company.
Yeah. And now he works with you,
for you.
I don't know, how do you say it? How do you say that?
Technically.
Or do you work for him?
He does work for me.
Okay.
But
it's an awkward position because my parents worked for me too. So we can get into that in a minute.
But I mean, technically, you know, he's been working for me since I was born, but
interesting.
But now it's just on the tax returns, on all the official documents.
So lollipops, Zollipops. That wasn't in your. Did that end up in your idea binder? Or was
it
this?
Did.
Or
it
was
did.
This where you threw the idea binder in the closet because you didn't need it anymore because you came up with the best possible idea?
Well, you know, at first it just seemed like, you know, oh, this is just one of my other inventions, and I was like, oh, it's gonna go in the idea binder. I'm probably not gonna do anything about it. I'm gonna obsess about it for a couple weeks. Then my parents are gonna say something else. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have another idea. But really, I wrote down like a plan in my idea binder, like for Zollipops. I just, you know, wrote down just like lollipops with a stick, colored them in. And I was like, I have a business plan.
Tell me the story. Tell me the story of how you got that idea.
Yeah, so when I came up with the idea, I was actually on a trip to the bank with my dad, and the bank teller had offered me a lollipop, and my dad told me, you know, you shouldn't have candy because sugar is terrible for your teeth. So I asked him, I was like, why can't we make a healthy lollipop that's good for my teeth so that I could have candy and you couldn't say no? And, you know, it kind of started out, I was like, oh, well, this is perfect because this is something that me and all my friends can have and our parents just can't say anything about it. We have all the power.
Lollipops then.
Yeah.
And it's good.
Yeah, we can just eat candy whenever we want. And, you know, I really wasn't expecting it to turn into, you know, a multi-million dollar company or something that, you know, is sold in Target, Kroger, like all the places that my mom took me grocery shopping, like my entire life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just like, from that plan and the idea binder to a real thing.
So that was at like, 7, right?
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, it's on the shelves, right?
Yes.
2 years later, it's for sale.
Yes.
How, I want to talk about that process because businesses are hard to start. Inventions are even harder. So your dad told you need to do your research. Is that right?
Yes. I told him, I was like, when are we going to make these lollipops? And he was like, you know, Alina, if you want to get something done, you have to do the research. You have to write out a plan. You got to do the work. So
what did you think of that?
I mean, it sounded fair. I was like, okay, you know.
You're like, Dad, I'm a dreamer. I'm not a researcher. That's what I would be thinking. So what did you, I mean, like, what was your sourcing? Like, how did you research at 7? I mean, geez, Encyclopedia Britannica was what I had at 7, but the world's a bit of a different place now.
Well, he gave me a couple different websites. He said, okay, well, like, check Amazon, check a couple of the, like, larger retail websites to see if there's actually anything like this.
Mm-hmm. So your dreams didn't get crushed, kind of like the peanut butter and jelly in the same jar?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was a tough time.
I want to make sure that you understand that my invention when I was a kid, because there was Invent America, was I created the Easy Reader, which was a book shelf, like so your book would sit up so you could look at it, and then it had like little buttons in the back where you could raise and lower the back of it and a spot for your pencils in the front. Pretty sure that existed. And then my other really great idea was that I wanted to, that I made Tic Tacs that also brushed your teeth. I just basically covered Tic Tacs in toothpaste. So anyway, those didn't work. But tell me about how you got yours to work.
Well, so after I like checked Amazon, I checked probably like Walmart.com, other you know retail websites, and I found that there wasn't actually anything like what I was thinking. Like I found like sugar-free candy, but it was like Werther's, Russell Stover, like your grandma's purse candy, and there was nothing that was like cleaning your teeth, nothing that was sugar-free and fun. Like, that was definitely something I noticed. Like, all the sugar-free was kind of dull. It was kind of boring. Mm. And I was like, well, kids aren't going to want to eat sugar-free or things that are good for you if they're boring and they don't taste good. Well, you know, like, when you think sugar-free, at least when I think of sugar-free, I think of those little, like, caramel candies that my grandma has. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, she'd be like, oh, do you want a caramel candy? Like, no, Grandma. No, I want real candy, not that. Not the candy that's been in your purse for at least a year.
So you wanted to create something new.
Exactly.
You didn't want some old new version of an old product. Mm-hmm. You wanted something new.
Yeah. And it was like, there was nothing like it.
So how did you go? So you do some research. You realize that it's not available anywhere. Nobody makes this, from what you can tell. Then what?
Then I started researching not only like flavors and colors, but I also looked at like Amazon statistics. So I was like, well, you know, I look at the best-selling products, and then I look at, you know, what flavors are in like the best-selling bag. Mm-hmm. I want to say the top six. It was like strawberry, yeah. Grape, orange,
watermelon.
Watermelon wasn't in it.
What?
I know.
Preposterous.
I know. I love watermelon. We just made watermelon pops. It was strawberry, orange, grape, raspberry, and what was the last one?
Lime?
No, it's on here.
You made them
cherry.
All. Cherry, of course.
That's what it was.
Of course.
And then we, like, one of our, like, big, like, family, it's not even, like, a tradition, but, like, our family always eats pineapple. Like,
just fresh pineapple?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pineapple's
we just
wonderful.
Love pineapple.
Wonderful.
And it's like, we were like, oh, well, let's get a little crazy. Let's add a pineapple flavor.
Well, you're making it for you at the end of the day, right?
Exactly.
You're the one who wants the, you know, healthy lollipop, so why wouldn't you make your own flavor?
Exactly. And that's actually gotten, like, really great feedback. It's like on Amazon for the single flavors, it goes strawberry and then pineapple. So that's interesting.
Then what? I mean, we still have to make a product here. You're still clicking on a computer, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's like doable. I would do that research, but now you have to like make the thing.
Yes. So, you know, we were doing the research. I found all of this like information about, oh, like lollipops are the most preferred hard candy out of kids.
Okay.
And like all of these like random facts, along with what is now our mission statement, which is, so tooth decay is actually the single greatest epidemic facing kids in America today, according to U.S. Surgeon General, and it's a preventable disease.
Hmm.
So, you know...
Not hunger?
Well, I mean, at least what I think about is when I think, like, the number one epidemic, I'd think, in America at least, I'd think, oh, asthma, food allergy, food intolerance, which are all on the rise, and you see them in your everyday life.
Lack of confidence, things like that.
Yeah.
Just, very detrimental.
Yeah. But I definitely wouldn't have thought tooth decay.
Yeah.
And when I found out that it not only was number one, but it was still growing at a rapid rate, I was like, okay, now we have a mission behind this.
Okay.
I want to stop this. And then I just watched YouTube video after YouTube video on how to make hard candy.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just videos from like manufacturing facilities making mass hard candy.
Okay.
Then I looked up.
That's pretty hard to translate to your kitchen, I would imagine.
Oh yeah. Oh
so
yeah.
So then what like, tell me about your first experience making hard candy in your kitchen.
Well, it wasn't a walk in the park. I first had to beg my parents to let me buy the ingredients.
Which were?
Well, I had like taken an ingredient list of like a normal lollipop, mm-hmm. and then I like replace the sugar with like stevia.
Yep.
And like I used like natural like flavors and colors and things like that, which was like our like very first like ingredient list.
Right. Was there like beet juice and things like that in these to give it the color and stuff?
Like it's turmeric, annetto, beet juice. For the blue ones, we just made blue lollipops, like a blue raspberry flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like impossible to find a blue, and it turns out it's like algae. So like that's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like glue magic or something. There's some weird ingredient that is out there that's put in like health food smoothies and you know, bowls and whatnot.
Yeah.
It looks so cool on Instagram because it's blue and it turns out it's something super healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. I found that really interesting too, because in the beginning I was like, Dad, like why can't we have blue?
Yeah.
He's like, that's not natural.
Yeah.
I was like, no kidding. Later I found out I have a blue dye allergy. So.
Oh, fun. Well, that's okay, right? Because you can use something natural and it's
exactly.
Fine then,
no,
right?
Yeah, that's fine. But like the blue one and like blue lake, like
those things
are the
that
things
you
I'm
see on the ingredients
to.
List, and you're like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, it's blue, like
yellow number five. What are you?
it's some kind of chemical compound that I don't want to know what's in it. But you know, like in the beginning, like we were like, oh, like this is all gonna be so healthy and everything. And so I went to the store, I bought the ingredients, I'm at home, I'm in the kitchen, I'm like boiling sugar. I had like my parents like order like a candy That's thermometer dangerous. On Amazon.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, I'm so sciencey. Like I had a, oh, I can't remember. Oh, I had like an apron. Okay. I had like a chef's apron. And okay. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like a mad scientist, okay. like doing this experiment. but I'm like, I'm putting like hot sugar on like parchment paper and like putting it in the oven or like
oh,
something.
Oh, really?
Like,
is that what you do? Is it supposed
no,
to cook or is it supposed to just cool?
It's just supposed to cool,
okay,
but
yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, it needs to be even hotter than the boiling sugar. It just, yeah, that makes sense.
You're like, it's not firming up. I must need to turn the volume up.
Melt
turn the
it
heat up.
More. But it like exploded
yeah.
in the oven, and then I tried the microwave, of course, you know, plan B. Why would I clean up the oven when I could just use a microwave?
Where was your mom and dad at this point in time to recommend maybe not the microwave?
Banging their heads against walls.
They
just
were
like,
watching?
Please stop, Alina. But I wasn't going to stop. They knew I wasn't going to stop. I'm very tenacious.
So you were kind of playing around. I'm getting a feeling
yes.
like this wasn't super serious. You were, I mean, you were
I
just
mean,
playing
I
around.
I was taking it very seriously.
Well, you were seven, so... Let's all put it in perspective here. I mean, I get it, but
yes.
you were also like, if a 7 year old, my sister is 3 and 5 year old, if her 5 year old wanted to make something in the kitchen, I'd be like, whatever, do whatever you want with it. It's just for fun.
Yeah. I mean, I was definitely very serious about making it.
Yeah.
But kind of at this point, I was definitely thinking, like, I don't think I can make it myself. But
okay, then so that no, that makes sense. I mean, you're seven. So
yeah.
then, how did you get help to make it into the right, into a formula that would work?
So I went and I talked to my dentist and my dental hygienist after arguing with my parents about not cleaning up the kitchen.
Who told you to talk to your dentist?
It was my idea because
okay.
I figured. Well, I mean, my thinking behind it was if I want to make something that cleans your teeth, why don't I talk to the people that I go to clean my teeth? I don't know.
You were fed good water growing up.
Well, I live at least 30 minutes from Flint, so, you know, we're gonna...
Oh.
Yeah. You know, we had a
Maybe
we had
they
a nice
improved
filter.
Their formula.
Yeah. No, it was a minor problem. It's all fixed now.
Oh, yeah,
it's,
sure.
It's all great.
And you guys are still here? No cancer, no tumors? Good.
Yeah. We have a great water filter.
Fantastic.
So, you know, I talked to my dentist and my dental hygienist, and they're like, oh, well, we've used xylitol and erythritol. We've seen it in mints. They use it in their, like, foamy teeth stuff that they
okay.
put on your teeth to clean a taste okay. gross or... I don't know. Lots of dentistry things that I don't really understand. But like they're like, oh, well, we've seen xylitol and erythritol used in mints that are, you know, allegedly cleaning your teeth. And like different gums use xylitol, not only as like a teeth cleaning product, but mm-hmm. also as a sweetener because
mm-hmm.
It's plant-based, it's all natural. And so I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll use those. So I had... Then we started looking for like a food scientist to work with. So after I had kind of like written down what ingredients I wanted to use, like I was like, oh, like I want xylitol, erythritol, isomalt, like which is like the base for like a lollipop.
Oh yeah, of course.
It's like instead of using sugar, that like crystallizes.
Uh-huh.
That's basically what
well,
does
you did
like
your
this.
Research, so you
yeah.
you knew.
So I just kind of like had like written down the ingredients, but I had no idea how much to use or anything.
Right.
So you know, working with this food scientist, we kind of went over. Okay, so for the strawberry one, we're gonna use this color, this flavor, like
okay.
this extract, and this is how much we're using of each of them per like batch of I don't
okay.
know 100, and then we did that with all the flavors. We only had 5 flavors at the time because later that year we had added cherry mm-hmm. as like Valentine's Day, like
mm-hmm.
cherry sweetheart for your, oh, I can't even remember what it is. It was like cherry for your sweetheart. Yeah, cherry for your sweetheart. That's what it was. So that was later, but you know, we started off with those 5 flavors
yeah.
and then we traveled around to different, manufacturing facilities,
mm-hmm.
Which are really called plants, but
right.
I mean,
so at this point in time, has everyone helped you for free?
Well, we paid the food scientist.
Okay.
I mean, my dentist wasn't like, well, I just helped you, so, you know.
Right. You went in as a 7-year-old for advice, and he just gave you some advice, right?
Yeah.
And then the food scientist, though.
Well, we hired them to
right.
help us.
So is this person part of the team now, or was this just a
it was just
shot thing?
It was just kind of like a consulting
right.
kind of just like one time, like, and we'd worked with like different food scientists.
So like, how much like, did that food scientist cost? You're 7.
Oh, I don't know. It wasn't that much.
Did you pay for it?
Yes, we did.
You paid for it?
Well, we put together a budget for this.
Oh, okay.
So
your parents are helping you at this point, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. My parents were very supportive of my business ventures.
Okay.
Because they kind of realized that I was like doing the research and I was putting the work in.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, she's serious. Like, all right.
It's no different than if your kid is interested in playing sports and you have to go get a mitt and, you know, a bat and a ball or, you know, cleats or whatever it is that supports your sport.
Yeah.
Or activity. Say you want to go to tumbling class and you know, it's a membership and you have to pay for, you know, each session. I mean, they all cost money. So it makes sense. You're really interested in this and they supported you.
Exactly.
In this
In the
experience.
Same way. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like in the beginning, like this was like around the stage, like when we found out that we wanted to find a manufacturing facility, this is when we kind of like put the budget together. I literally took like my money like from like birthdays, Christmas, grandma. I was like, hi, grandma. I'd like to start a business. Donations? But you know, I
were you
put
always
that together.
Were you entrepreneurial sort of growing up? Like, I will do these things for money. Like, did you get paid to clean your, you know, make your bed and take the garbage out or anything like that? Did you go deliver newspapers? Did you? I mean, when I was a kid, I remember when I wrote a little book of poems, and it was, you know, copied on a copier, and I stapled it together in the top left corner, and it was called Poems, Poems, Poems. Trust me, I did not spell poems right. I did not spell it poems. I spelled it P-O-M-E-S, poems. Yeah, and I'm not good at spelling still. But anyway, I went and sold them for $1. So that was my entrepreneurial sort of interest when I was at that age. So did you have that in you? Did you? I mean, like, I'm just trying to figure out how at 7, 8, 9 years old you had really any money.
Well, you know, your grandparents are like, oh, we're going to put this into our college fund. But then it kind of ends up sitting as cash in my piggy bank.
Because I'd get like $10 for my birthday.
Well,
that really isn't going to go very far for the scientists.
So, I mean, we came up with, I don't know. Well, I came up with a certain amount of money. My dad and my mom like matched it. With like a little bit more than
Why are you being so vague right now?
Well, because I'm not very good at math, and so I was like trying to split $7,500 in two, but then I was like, I can't, and then I'm gonna start counting on my fingers, and it's gonna be a whole thing.
Well, see, now you'd see that I can totally relate. My math skills are super poor, so
yeah.
I'd be like, oh yeah, 8,000 divided by 2 is 4. Then never mind, skip it. It's 75 divided by 2. So that was the plan. Moving 7,500 divided by 2. Which is something that someone listening would know.
I feel like it's like it's a decimal.
Yeah, probably.
I need a calculator for that.
So that was the amount that it took to move forward to manufacture this product.
Yes. So, you know, with that $7,500, we took it to different manufacturing facilities and or plants, as they call them in the candy industry.
Got it.
And really, when we were going to like tour these plants, like one of the times, like at the very first tour, we were like going through the entire thing. And at the very end, I was like, you know, Dad, like this was a really cool experience. Like it was so great to see like how they actually make candy and like not seeing it in a video. But where's the plant? And he looked at me, he goes, this is the plant. And I'm like, no, like a plant with leaves.
Mm-hmm. He's like, no, this is like, a facility.
Yeah, he's like, no, this building is the plant.
They're trying to use some psychology on you to call it a plant, like it's supposed to be real positive. It's a manufacturing facility. It's a bunch of iron and
steel
equipment.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But I was like,
okay, so
I was really excited to see the plant.
So
I was like, I want it.
How many versions came out before someone manufactured the product?
We did about 18 plant trials.
Okay.
So.
Oh wow! With these manufacturers.
Yes.
Oh wow! And all 18 different ones?
They were like,
or like we would do each like, would do a few.
So yeah, each would do a few.
Okay.
There were
right.
maybe
was
like,
it a clear winner? Did you have like a clear winner?
Not at first.
Did it come down to price?
No. It kind of came down to who had the facility that we could do nut free. Mm-hmm. So that we could make the claim that it's nut free.
Right.
Right. Who had it so that, I mean, not, we weren't just making like a normal lollipop. We were making a sugar free lollipop. So it was, it had to be used on different equipment than sugary lollipops. So they had to have separate equipment, and working with xylitol and erythritol, that needs special equipment as well. So we had to be selective of plants that even could manufacture it. But you know, in the end it all came down to, oh, okay, this one's nut free. This one is closer to us or farther from us, or it just kind of, it happened in a way that we were just kind of like, okay, this one is just.
Are the manufacturers the one that then distribute your product for you too?
No. So we, we'll do the manufacturing there. They'll ship it to. They'll either do the bagging at the manufacturing facility, or in some cases, we have another warehouse that bags. So they just send the bulk candy there, and then they'll bag it from there. That's more for like the bins or mm-hmm. the individual flavors, mm-hmm. because we only sell those on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And in a couple select retailers, like World Market at the Grove, and that's just smaller portions of mm-hmm. Of bags that we need. So, and then we do a very minimal amount of packing in-house. That's only for displays. So, but from, we don't really ship from the warehouse.
Okay.
We don't usually ship from the manufacturing mm-hmm. facility. We either ship from one of three warehouses. The one warehouse that packs, the one warehouse that handles a couple retailers. So like some of the bigger retailers that have, you know, so many stores that we can't keep all of the pallets in our warehouse where our office is, we'll ship them out of there, just straight out of the separate warehouse. And then our warehouse, we do more of our international orders from there because we need like several pallets for international orders.
Wow.
So they're not continuously.
You said office,
like one.
And it makes me want to know who's on your team. Like, how many employees are part of Zolly Pops? Or is that the name of the company?
So the name of the company is Zolly Candy.
Okay.
It originally was Zolly Pops, but we changed it to kind of, you know, umbrella over all of the products as we expand to more. And currently who works, in like the Zolly office, we have six people. And then we have four other people.
I have two employees.
And then we directly employ 10 people. So six of them work in our office. Four of them work around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So my publicist, Clint, he lives in LA. Mm-hmm. So like, we directly employ him, but he just doesn't live in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And then our head of sales, lives in Pennsylvania, but we directly employ him as well, as along with a couple other people. And then in total, we probably impact about 300 jobs from the manufacturing to the packing.
Do you have investors?
We do. We do have, they're more like angel family and friends investors. Which are the only ones that we've...
You just have money that grows on trees. You got all kinds of stuff going on. You come up with $7,500. You have angel investors. It's magical.
I mean, yeah. You know...
And it's working, which is amazing. But so did you have to give away a part of your company?
Yes. But small amount. Mm-hmm. 10-15%.
Yeah, so. That's always the thing. It's always the tough thing when you have your own business and you're like, I came up with it and I dreamt this into existence and somebody wants to have a chunk of it, but you know that you can't do it all yourself.
Exactly.
So you know that's the challenge is like, how do you get by with doing as much as you can and giving away as little of your company as you possibly can.
And I mean,
who advises you on that? Because I mean, look, maybe you're doing it all yourself. If so, you're not really 14. I don't believe you. but who, like, how, who's giving you business advice?
Well,
who's teaching you how all these words? Who's teaching you the word umbrella? And like, I mean, I'm just trying to think. When I was 14, I just don't feel like this was the language I was speaking. So,
umbrella?
Who's it? Well, I mean, you're talking about like an umbrella company for like, you know, Zolli candy, for all of the, you know, these are just not concepts that normal 14-year-olds are really like wrapping their head around.
Well,
and so who's advising you, or is it all you? And do you read books? Like, how did you get to this point?
Well, you know, when you sit in enough business meetings, you just kind of learn a lot of new words. It's lots of fun. I'm still not great at spelling, but I do.
Or math. I can relate.
I still have some pretty nifty vocabulary words that I have just like learned from just like sitting in meetings with people that are just like, you know, whipping out just like 12 letter words. I'm just like, okay.
Mississippi, like, I got this. Is the longest word I knew when I was 14.
But really, my dad is doing a lot of, you know, advising. He works in the company like on a day-to-day basis, and he like
it's his full-time job now, right?
Yes, he manages it when I'm at school. Mm-hmm. Because, you know,
yay, so freshman. You're a freshman.
Yep.
Who decides how your time gets divvied up? Is this your decision or is this your parents' decision?
It's a little bit of both. You know, they're very supportive of the company, but they also know that it's important for me to have like my real like childhood experiences. And
tell me about your real child. Tell me about real childhood minus being a business mogul.
Well, you know, I feel like, it's definitely, that's a hard question because this was
Why?
A big part of my childhood.
Okay, but it doesn't mean you don't go to school and you don't like, you know, have a boyfriend or go to parties or, talk about getting a car. You can't speak this language and not have been at a party. I think that you're lying. It's because your dad's sitting here, isn't it?
I don't have any of those three things that you just mentioned.
Of course you don't have a car yet because you're 14. But do you think about that? Like, do you go to? Do you play in any kind of sports? Are you artistic? Do you play an instrument? You know, what do you do for like? What do you and your friends talk about? Can you relate at school? I mean, like, are you at a point right now where you're like, I don't fit in. Like, I'm not entertained or interested in the monotony of school, and I would rather do this other thing that's so much more fulfilling and stimulating, and biology's just really not doing it for you.
Well, you know, I definitely don't.
Tell me about your fun things that you do with school, and then we'll talk about how you relate in school, because I think that's important. I'm curious about that.
So outside of school, I'm a competitive dancer, so I'm on a dance team.
Cool.
I've been on it since...
What kind of dance?
All kinds. Oh. So jazz, tap, ballet, hip-hop, contemporary, modern, lyrical.
Holy crap.
What am I missing?
Usually someone identifies with one, right? But...
We do it all.
Wow, that's awesome.
So I've been dancing since I was like 2.5, mm-hmm. and I started my competition team when I was 7. It was seven, being a 7-year-old, it was lots of fun for me. I was doing competition dance.
Yeah,
I was
building
a
company.
Yeah.
You know, they say there's like 7-year cycles with your life. So you're at 14 now, which is interesting.
I feel like a lot of interesting things happened last year. That was like my
about every 7 years.
Yeah, 7-year cycling, you know. 6-year cycle, same thing.
Okay, so you do dance?
Yep. So that's a couple days a week. I also just joined my school's POM team.
Okay.
I got on varsity, so that's always
fun. As a freshman?
Yeah.
Wow. Very cool.
That's very exciting. So, you know, football games, those are going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Football games in Michigan are always very cold, but still fun.
Yeah, you won't be able to just wear that skirt all the time. You'll have to have the pants on underneath.
We have to wear the skirt all the time.
No pants? What? I mean, I was a cheerleader in Illinois where I grew up, and
It's cold.
And it's cold. You get to wear the pants if it's that cold. Yeah. Man, that's not fair. That's okay. Yeah, all right.
It's cruel.
You might rethink that December 27th.
I think I have a feeling they might. But you know, like outside of school, I hang out with my friends. Like my best friend in the entire world. We're like attached at the hip, because we never went to the same school until now. So now we're gonna be freshmen together on the varsity pom team,
okay,
doing dance together and going to school together. And I have a feeling we're gonna get really sick of each other. No, I'm just kidding. But you know,
besties it's never just, never get sick of each other.
Well, you know, when
you just grow apart. That's what happens. Either you grow apart
That's
or you
so
grow
sad.
Together. It's true. It's just what happens,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't get sick of each other. You just grow apart.
Yeah, that's true. But when you're spending one night at her house, then one night at my house, then one night at her house.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no, we're going back to your house and we're going to spend the night again.
Okay.
I have a family. No, okay. No, you don't. You're canceling your family.
So
thing.
Do you have a boyfriend?
Boys don't like me.
Why?
Because I'm never at school.
Is that why?
I'd like to think so. Maybe they feel threatened by me.
I mean, I dealt with this when I was young. I mean, I raced from 10 years old. I was gone all the time on the weekends. I had my own thing. I said that they were intimidated by me. I've always been a very strong person. So that could be the case.
Plus, you could drive.
And I could drive.
And, you know, they know if they broke your heart, you have a car. So, I don't know. They
might be
scared.
Crazy on them. No, I think that was part of it, though, you know. I mean, I think that, you know, there's a male-female dynamic is really interesting. And, you know, in this archaic way of thinking, men are supposed to be, like, the provider and strong. And, you know, it's just a shifting dynamic in the world where men and women are on the same playing field and men can support a strong woman. And, you know, you might find yourself you might not be able to find a really good person for a long time because you're in a really interesting spot where you're not only doing really great things you're 14 doing it. You're doing amazing things at 14. And it's probably going to be hard for people to relate. What do your, you know, minus the dynamic of friends, like guys, what do girls say about what you're doing?
I mean, you know,
Do they even get it? Because people didn't even ask me sometimes about racing. I'm like, I wish you'd ask more when I was in school because I kicked ass. I won all the time and you didn't ask me. Now I'm in IndyCar and you ask me and I'm like, I finished 4th, I finished 8th, I finished 10th, I finished 5th. You know, I'm like, should ask me back when I was winning every single weekend. But they didn't really ask about it a lot because it wasn't really part, like, I explained that I had two lives. I had my home life where I went to the parties when I was home and I, you know, was a cheerleader and I hung out with my friends. And, you know, then away from there, I had a whole different set of friends that were at the racetrack, and that was a whole different life for me. But they didn't go together.
Exactly, yeah.
So do you experience the same thing?
I definitely experience, the exact same thing. You know, especially, not being there, I kind of, miss, you know, Tommy and Sally got together, and then they broke up, and then they got back together, and I have no idea what's going on. And quite frankly, I don't really care whether Tommy and Sally got back together.
Now, is this because you're not in touch with it or because you feel like you have better perspective on perhaps what's important?
Well, I feel like I've always been told, you know, just rise above. Is it going to matter in, you know, 4 years once you've graduated high school whether Tommy and Sally are still together or if they're broken up? No. So
just for a country song.
And, you know, I just kind of feel like I definitely still have lots of friends and I still am in the loop. But
yeah.
It's just kind of does it really matter all that much if I miss a party? Because I'm a teenager. Of course I love going to parties and I love, you know, hanging out with my friends. And, you know, I do want to do that. And so I make time for it. And my parents help me make time for that. And because I think it's important as well. So I guess I definitely think that, you know, that's important to have that balance. But really, people, like what, like when you said, like, people don't really ask you about, people didn't really ask you about, you know, oh, like, how is racing? Like, people don't care that I do right. that. Like, I could say, like, oh my gosh, like, I was the youngest person on the cover of Entrepreneur magazine. Like, that's incredible. Like, a magazine that I
read. Dude, I was excited when I was on the cover.
I literally, it was really funny. So the last bell just rang for school. Clint called me. I answered my phone. He was like, oh my gosh, you got the cover. I literally ran down the hallway screaming and skipping. I was so happy. And all my friends were like, what are you doing? And I was like, I got the cover of Entrepreneur magazine. And they were like, what's that? So it's like, it's just a different world. They just don't understand.
Do you feel like sometimes you have to hide your successes because it seems like you're gloating?
Yes. Yes, definitely.
What does that feel like?
Well, only to certain people. Yeah. I feel like my close friends, they're happy for me. Mm-hmm. And they realize that, you know, especially ones that I've been friends with since I was, like, young, they realize how much work I've put into it and how passionate I am about it, mm-hmm. and they're happy for me. Mm-hmm. But, like, the people at school that are just, like, the mean girls and, you know,
what I
like to call the blonde mafia, who, you know, were never very
nice
to me.
Every school has their clique names.
Oh, yeah.
I remember mine from high school, too.
And, you know,
you realize why they're mean, right?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Well, they, obviously, they're a little jealous that I'm verified on Instagram, but...
Social media is such a kid thing. I have to do it.
It's really
like part of my job, I feel like, but it is, it's
life
for people.
Well, that's the same thing with me. Like, I don't do it because I want followers, because I want to be, like, some kind of, like, Instagram influencer. I do it because it's good for marketing. Like, social mm-hmm. media has such yeah. an influence,
yeah.
and if I want to, you know, grow right. the brand, right. get the word out about it, social media is a great way to do it.
Right.
I'm not... Right. you know, bragging,
so
like, I'm so famous on social media.
So they're insecure is the problem.
Yeah.
Because the when someone is rude and mean to you, they are projecting their own insecurities about themselves. So it's really, you seem quite evolved. So this will be interesting for you to look at as you move forward to see what people project onto you that doesn't feel good because, you know, it's reflecting who they are, not who you are. So these girls or guys, they're insecure and they feel as though it's what they're getting from it is that they're recognizing that they haven't accomplished that and they don't like that feeling. So they're gonna try to bring you down to their level. And that happens all the time. That happens with, you know, whether you have a million, you know, multi-million dollar company or whether you made varsity in your freshman year. Like, they will find a way to bring you down because they are insecure. So it's going to be really important for you to maintain your confidence and your level of awareness for where this source of contention and discomfort comes from, because that's the stuff that's called bullying, right?
Yeah.
I mean... It's not really about the person being bullied. It's about the bully, right? And why they're doing it. And at the end of the day, if you can get to a point, because this is what I had to do with social media and with other people that maybe I knew, but some of them I didn't, is that you have to really arrive at the point where you feel sympathy and you feel bad for them because you understand it has nothing to do with you. And if it does, and if you feel like a certain level of insecurity, it's your checkpoint of like, am I not trying hard enough? Was I mean to them? Did I say that because did I say, oh my God, I got the cover of the magazine because I wanted a reaction, right? I want to be cool. Then that's your problem and you have to figure that out. But
exactly.
If you're being authentic and genuine and kind and, you know, a good human being and they treat you poorly, you'll come to the point where you realize I feel bad for them
yeah.
because that is their reality, is that all they can do is bring you down. And that's going to be tough for you.
And that's why I really kind of, I make a conscious effort to try and keep it low profile in my mm-hmm. personal life.
Yeah.
Like at school, you know, people will be like, oh, like, why were you gone? I'm like, oh, well, I just had a meeting. Mm-hmm. That's all. Like, mm-hmm. there's no need to expand on it. There's no need to say, oh, well, you know, it was really exciting. Like, I I got to like meet all these incredible people, mm-hmm. because there's no point in doing that. I had my enjoyment with it. Mm-hmm. Like, it was exciting for me, but that doesn't mean I need to talk about it or make mm-hmm. anything about me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I don't need people saying, mm-hmm. oh, well, you know, Alina did this, and that, like, and now she's talking about it. Like, why does it matter? It doesn't matter. Like, I'm
it
really
is cool at first, yeah, though. It's it hard because it's super cool
it
at
is.
First.
It's
You're
really
like,
cool.
guess who I met and so, guess what I did.
So I definitely have to kind of like, I realize, okay, I had the experience. I'm grateful that I had this experience. A lot of people don't have the opportunities that I've had. Mm-hmm. And I realize that. Yeah. And I just need to, you know, keep it in check. Like, you don't need to talk about it. You don't need to, because the reality of it, even if I wouldn't mean to make someone feel bad, it could come off like I'm trying to mm-hmm. brag about it, and then someone mm-hmm. could end up feeling bad about it. And that's the last thing I would want. So,
do you ever feel bad? And do you ever get to that point? Do you feel offended or sad or insecure? I mean, do you get to that point sometimes?
About things I've said or like...
Just, I don't know, when things get to you.
I mean, I'll see like comments on like videos, not necessarily on my personal account, mm-hmm. but like on videos that I've done on like that they've appeared on like other people's Instagrams, mm-hmm. or like big like media outlets on Instagram, and I'll look at the comments, mm-hmm. and it's just like, mm-hmm. and I think about it, and I, you know, sometimes I want to be petty and I want to respond and I want to be like, you know, like, it's not nice to like say stuff like that, and like, you know, it does hurt, mm-hmm. and it's like, it's hard because it's...
What do you do then? Who do you go to?
I just think about it, I say, you know, responding, give them what they want. It's hard not to react, because I feel like I definitely have kind of a... I have a personality where I will snap back. Like, if somebody says something to my face, I'll be like, no, like, that's not okay. Like, don't say that. But, you know, on social media, things can really get twisted around to sound really bad. So
there's no cadence or anything. There's no inflection. No, it's just words.
Yeah. So, you know, I can just sit there and I say, okay, keep smiling.
So
that's
you internalize.
Your opinion.
So oh, you yeah. internalize it?
Yeah.
Really?
And, well, also, like, I do tend to, like, read them, like, when I'm with, like, my mom or my dad or, like, my friends, and they're like, just let it go.
Yeah.
Let it go.
But you don't have honestly, anyone that you talk have, to about when you're upset?
Well, you know, my parents are definitely very, they definitely tell me, they're like, it could have nothing to do with you.
Right.
It could be something that somebody else is going through, and they just need an outlet, mm-hmm. and social media is obviously has been an outlet for people just to hate on other people and make mm-hmm. them feel better about themselves. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm kind of at the point where if it makes you feel better about yourself, mm-hmm. there's nothing I can do about it. Mm-hmm. Like, if that's what you choose to do with your like anonymous like social media account, it's just not my, there's nothing I can do about it.
There's only one solution to this. You need to get a burner account, and you need to just burn them all. No, that usually gets found out.
Yeah,
don't do
those
that.
Are, yeah, that.
Well, I think it's important because, like, whether, you know, for me in my life, too, no matter what point I've been at, there's got to be somebody that you can go to when stuff is difficult. Mm-hmm. And shoot, I mean, if it's got to be a therapist, it's a therapist. But if it's your parents, it's your parents. If it's a friend, it's a friend. But, you know, there should be that. There should be a, you know, there should be people that you can go to when things are difficult, because that's life.
Yeah.
Like, that's life. I mean, I like, whether you're doing what you're doing or what I'm doing or what anyone else is, you got to have someone to sound off to so that you can, you know, go through your own therapy.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And I really, important. Like, I talked to my parents about it, and I'm just like yeah. I don't understand, like, why people, like, do this. And, like, I'll talk to my friends about it. But I feel like I've definitely kind of been taught from a young age, just rise above.
That's good.
That's really what my dad says every time, like, something,
yeah,
like, that something is, like, said, or, like, I mean, heck, somebody cuts me off on the highway and it's like,
wait, you're driving?
Well, no, but like hypothetically, like,
I mean, I was illegally driving at 14. In fact, actually my sister and I were driving around my parents' building. They were in construction and, my dad had a truck. And so we were so small. We were probably, I don't know, five, six, seven years old. And one of us would work the steering and one would work the pedals.
No,
and they thought this was totally acceptable. I'm like, oh my God, my parents were so brave.
Well, I have driven in a graveyard.
Good. My dad said, if you need lessons, I can help you out.
I'll
teach you the shortcuts to, you know, going first at a stop sign and things like that. The things that I got taught when I was
a kid. My dad was like, you know, Alina, if you're going to learn how to drive, you might as well learn somewhere where you can't hurt anyone. So he took me to a graveyard, and I was like,
they're all dead.
Fair enough.
That's good.
Fair enough.
Morbid and wonderful. Actually, your parents is something that I want to talk to you about because, you know, I have my own experience with parents, and like I said, my parents worked for me. And when I started racing Indy cars in 2005, they started working for me, and they started working full time, and they would do everything from driving my bus to, you know, negotiating deals to managing my finances to my schedule. They did everything. And, you know, at that point in time, it really was the best, safest option, right? It just was. So who else could I trust at that point in time?
Exactly.
You know, and then I paid them and, but it's a challenging situation. I would advise anyone to have a plan for that. So I don't know if you've even thought about that or not, or what maybe has changed, because my parents became not really my parents. They were, you know, they would call and I'd be like, oh God, what do they want? Or I just wouldn't answer because I'm like, it was always about work. It was always about business. And, you know, I think it's an interesting dynamic. And, you know, I know your dad's sitting here right now and you're probably cringing listening to this, but this is important advice as someone with the experience. How has that dynamic changed? And maybe you'll be an anomaly and it'll just flow perfectly. And maybe, who knows, maybe someday you'll have a dream of something else and they'll run this company and you'll be doing something completely different. I don't know. But, you know, what's been the dynamic shift with this level of involvement from your parents with, you know, them working for you essentially, but really probably doing a lot of the work essentially?
Well, it definitely, I mean, as for level of involvement, they are very involved.
Yeah.
You know, like I mentioned, my dad runs the business right. While I'm at school. He manages the company. Also, he worked as a business consultant
right.
Before.
Well, that's going to be a lot of the business. Of I mean, you go to school from 8 till 3. So, you know, I mean, that's most of the day.
Yeah. And I mean, like after school, I go there. And I work, and I work at home, and I, you know, respond to emails when I'm at school. But, you know, there is kind of that trust there where it's like, okay, like, yeah. I definitely, like, take the wheel.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Well, it's just kind of, it has to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we are a family-owned company, so the majority owners are me and my younger sister. And then my dad owns a little bit. And then we have investors as well.
Mm-hmm.
My mom, she is like the schedule like master. Like my schedule is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like on a day-to-day basis, it is boom, 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 go to bed. That's it. Like not a lot of free time. And
your choice? Or necessary?
Yes and no. I have the option not to dance, but mm-hmm. I choose to anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I had the option not to be on the POM team, but I chose to anyways.
Mm-hmm. Do you have the option to not do a business call or not fly out to California or not?
I do. You know, kind of at this point, in the beginning, we were definitely more like, oh, well, you have this opportunity. Like, we need to take this opportunity.
Yeah, I know how that feels. You want to do it.
Exactly. And you know, definitely as I kind of get older and I kind of just realize some things just aren't as important as others and you have to
like
pick
what?
And choose.
What has fallen away for you?
Certain trips. I've had to miss like...
Fun trips or work trips?
Well, we try to make every work trip a little fun.
Yes, that's good. Yeah. That's good. That's great. That's a good thing to do. My dad taught me that finally at some point. He's like, try and make these trips fun. I'm like, yeah, that's a good idea, Dad.
So I have had to miss trade shows. Mm-hmm. And, you know, luckily I have a great team that steps up and goes. Yeah. And then there's obviously the email that comes after from the reporter, I wish I could have seen you there. And I'm just like, I'm trying to make it to everything, but sometimes it's just not gonna happen.
Right.
And if I can't, I just can't overstretch myself and then burn out.
Yeah.
Because it's not worth it to try and make every little thing that everyone wants from me. You just kinda gotta sit back, take a step back and look at it and think, how impactful is it going to be? Right. Is it going to be as impactful as this next thing that I have?
Sure.
And, you know, sometimes the answer is yes. Sometimes mm-hmm. the answer is no.
Right.
And when the answer is no, it's a hard thing to turn down, but
so you haven't have told to me just... how your dynamic has changed with the family. You just told me how busy you are.
Well, you know, the family dynamic hasn't really changed all that much.
Really?
Just because I've kind of grown up with it. Mm-hmm. Being so young and kind of starting it, mm-hmm. I guess I never really realized that it changed.
Ignorance is bliss. You don't know what the difference is, right? You've never experienced any other dynamic, so you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, I feel like now I kind of look at it and I'm like, oh, well, you know, other kids' lives aren't like this.
Right.
But mine is, and that's what I've kind of always known. So I don't think that it'd be...
You'll realize at some point in time if something needs to change, right? I mean, that's what... I basically needed to tell my parents to do things differently, and it got really hard to get to the point where I could basically yell at my parents. I can't do that. Like, I tell them how to do something. They're the ones that taught me how to walk, you know? How am I going to tell them how to do that? Do something, you know, it's a weird dynamic. So, you know, I think it is the best case scenario until something else happens because they're the ones that you can trust. They see you every single day. Like, the integration is obviously, you know, it's family. So, but you'll know someday if something doesn't feel right or mm-hmm. if you want to make a change or, you know, you feel uncomfortable. And, you know, I hit that point in my life, but I think you seem pretty mature. So, you know, it's something to keep on the radar is like, you know, maybe I think my parents were relieved actually when it happened because, you know, they got to get on with their life too. And, you know, they got to have some of their own identity again. But it's an interesting dynamic working with your family, no matter whether it's young, whether you're a kid or whether you're all adults and you're trying to run a restaurant or whatever. It's working with family is really challenging, and it takes a ginormous amount of, I love when I say words that aren't in a dictionary, communication.
Yes.
You have to tell each other how you're feeling all the time and your discomforts because that builds into resentment, and then all of a sudden you're in 3 days of therapy crying your eyes out because you realize that you got to the point of no return eventually. You know, those kinds of things can happen in life. So stay honest with that. I think that's important.
And I feel like definitely we try and find that balance. My parents, you know, they tell me, or my dad especially, he tells me, you know, you can disagree with me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was definitely something that I kind of struggled with, the idea of, well, if he has an idea and I'm, you know, and I don't feel the same way about, you know, if we should, you know, go this way or we should go that way, can I say no? Mm-hmm. Can I say I disagree? Mm-hmm. And he definitely told me, he was like, yes, you can say no. Like, you can disagree. And he basically said, like, at the end of the day, yes, you are the boss. Wow. But you need to take into account everyone else's opinion and everyone else's perspective. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, hey, this is my opinion, so this is a decision.
Yeah.
And so I feel like growing up having that mindset, mm-hmm. I was definitely always asking everyone, well, do you have another take on it? Or does anybody else, you know, want to throw out an idea? And I feel like that's kind of how we run the company now. With our team, we're very communicative.
Communicative. Yeah,
One of our big things is also don't assume. Don't just assume you're right.
Great.
Don't just assume that this is the way that everyone wants it to be.
Great. You should read a book called The Four Agreements.
Is it good?
It's great, yeah. Four Agreements is about, you know, just core principles of life, and one is to not assume.
I'm trying to get into more like businessy books too.
This is more spiritual. This is more like life lessons, you know? Like one of them is always do your best. So things like that, and it goes into these four, but I can write down some good books for you when we're done. So as the boss, like what is your full vision for Zolli Candy? Give me the grand, dun-da-da-da, where I see this, like what's your fullest vision that you have right now?
I definitely say, you know, as a business goal, we want to be the number one selling sugar-free candy in America, the world, even. Mm-hmm. We also, you know, want to grow our nonprofit to 22 million smiles.
Yeah, you guys have a charity that donate to. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so, you know, after I kind of found out that, you know, tooth decay is the single greatest epidemic, I was like, this is what I want to make the product about. This is what I want to create like a nonprofit or a foundation mm-hmm. around this company.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So we give free Zolli Pops to schools across America to teach kids about the importance of oral health care and entrepreneurship.
Cool.
It originally started at 250,000 smiles, then 500,000 smiles, then 1 million, and then 2 million.
So this is how many Zolli Pops you've
donated
to schools?
So like every year we kind of bump it up even more.
Yeah.
And that's how many lollipops. For like teachers who sign up, they sign up on our website, and it's 2 minutes of a survey, and it's a great program. There's 22 million elementary school kids, and you know, end goal is we get to 22 million. We've grown to 2 million on our own,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking, you know, if we got that far on our own, how far can we get with like a partner or mm-hmm. like someone else, you know,
sure.
just adding that rocket fuel behind
sure.
it to just bump us
up. Sponsor or somebody
exactly.
that's
yeah.
willing to, you know, promote the yeah. cause. And
not only yeah. just like a sponsor, but a partner,
mm-hmm.
someone who can not just provide money, but, you know, provide like a guidance or at the very least just be passionate about, you know, what we're talking about, what we're trying to do here. And that's mm-hmm. that's always really important when we look for in like a team member or, you know, anyone that we work with. We just want them to be passionate.
Do you hire people?
I do.
That's amazing.
It's lots of fun.
Do you fire people? Has anyone been fired yet?
Maybe.
No, or did you fire them?
No.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah. I wasn't like, you're fired. It was like, I don't think this is working out.
Yeah.
And
I had to fire my parents, so it doesn't get any worse than that.
It's just those decisions you got to make. You know, you got to look for the best interest in the company. It doesn't make them bad people. It doesn't make you a bad person
yeah.
for firing them.
Of course not. No. And look, everything leads to the next thing. They might just need to move on anyway. And it's hard for people to move on. I think people generally have a problem with change and they fear the unknown and they fear something going away forever. I don't think they're actually, I think that it really leads to better things
yeah.
Because it's all part of the process. But firing can be a little overwhelming.
Yeah. And
I don't want to fire anyone, and I'm 37.
You know, as a kid, like, I was always like, oh, well, would I get to fire someone? I'd be like, you're fired, get out. But like,
it turns out I don't feel like Donald Trump. I'm not confident, I'm not comfortable, I'm not deliberate.
I don't want to.
It takes a lot longer and it's not fun.
I just want to be nice. But I have a question for you.
Oh, go for it, yeah.
So I feel like we definitely kind of have experienced similar things, both working in kind of male-dominated, you know, lines of work. I know you've definitely said, like, you know, I was a woman in like a male-dominated kind of like racing industry, which was always what I thought was super cool. And I, you know, working in, like, going into Candy, I guess I never realized that it's all men. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no women, there's no, like,
did you know
young
that there's
people?
Never been a female female CEO of makeup company? I think I heard that the other day. I was like, are you kidding me?
That can't be true now, though.
Well, it's just business, though, right? So it's about being respected. It's about being valued. It's about having people that trust you. It's about having people that, you know, treat you the way that you deserve to be treated and believe in you, which is what I always said was the hardest part for me, is that just having people believe in me truly, not just like do their job, because the difference between doing your job and doing an excellent job is vastly different. You can show up for work and look like you're doing your job. I mean, if you've watched Office Space, it's possible. If you haven't watched Office Space, it's funny, you should watch it anyway. But doing a great job is something totally different. And so getting people to believe in you to the level that they're willing to work at that next level, mm-hmm. and put their and truly believe in you, like a feeling, not just the words, like, oh yeah, I believe in you. You know, that's really important.
Yeah. And that's a big thing with us too. We definitely look for people that are, you know, supportive and passionate. Mm-hmm.
Did you have a question?
Yes.
Yeah, go for it.
I guess just how did you not get just like really like to the point where you wanted to quit and you're just like, I just don't want to do this anymore. Like, nobody respects me. I get super outcasted. Like, I'm sure, well, at least in what I've experienced, like even as like just in like middle school and high school, like you will get left out of cliques and that's just how it is. Like, I'm sure the male drivers, you know, they went out and they had their fun. Mm-hmm. And
I experienced that when I was in England. I lived in England from 16 to 19 years old on my own. And the guys really were out on their own. Like, they left me out a lot, for sure.
And I mean, I can imagine. Like,
yeah. I mean, I didn't have girlfriends, so that those were my only friends.
Yeah.
So how did I deal with that?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that it's important that you can have your good friends and support system around you. You have to keep your goals in mind. I mean, you have to understand what you're doing it for. I think the fact that you have a charity to benefit, I think, is a really good foundational goal that extends beyond the company, that's really positive and emotional, and is a good connection point. I think that you have to find the confidence in yourself. I mean, if you you have to do things that educate you, so to get educated. You should know your stuff, because knowledge is power. That's for sure. If you walk into a meeting and, you know, you've done your homework and you know about them and you know about the brand, you know, the brand, you know about the, you know, about sales numbers and ROI and bottom lines and net and gross and all the stuff going on, like, look, they're going to have to respect you. So knowing your stuff is going to be really important, I think. Your dedication and determination, and then be humble, right? There's no... Yeah. Let your company speak for itself. Let your cover speak for itself. Isn't it? It's a lot cooler if somebody goes and walks through the airport, let's say going somewhere, and they see you on the cover and they're like, they come back to school and they're like, oh my God, we saw you. That is so much cooler than you having to tell them.
Yeah.
So, and understand why you would be expressing and like why you would want people to know. right? Yeah. And we all want to be recognized, and we all, and especially early on when things are going on, it's very exciting, but it's coming from a place of insecurity too. It's coming from, or a gloating sort of space where you want to be acknowledged for the things that you're doing because it's unique and cool and different, and you want to stand out. And you know, you just have to self-identify why you're doing that. But the most important thing is that you have a really good group around you, that you do your homework and work really hard, and follow your passion. It will resonate with people. If you're doing something that you really love to do, it resonates with people. You will permeate this like light and energy and joy about something, and everyone will feel that and they'll want to be a part of that. So stay true to that, and it might be Zolli candy for life, and it might just be for another 2 years. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, I retired at 37, 36. I'm 37 now. I was 36 years old when I retired. That's very young to retire. So it's easy to get self-identified with what you've made yourself to be. But just understand, it's just life. And it just doesn't matter. What really matters is you're doing something that you really enjoy and love. Don't ever feel like you have to do something. There's going to be things along the way that you have to do, a meeting that you have to do or something like that. But like the overlying feeling for it all should be something that you truly want. And there'll be a little grunt work along the way, but the rest of it should be fun. And also understand that the things that energize you and lift you up and make you feel good, no matter how much effort they are and work they are, those are the things that you should be doing. Yeah. If you're doing something that drains you and makes you feel exhausted and resentful and angry and bitter or irritable and tired, those things are not for you. It took me a long time to learn that, but I've only learned that in the last couple of years, but that is true. So sort of identify your energy levels with things. If you're doing something that's for you, it will make you feel good.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you.
Well, the last thing I want to ask you, because I think that there's going to be a lot of parents that are listening with kids, and you have done incredible things already, and you're an inspiration no matter what age. I think that it would be beneficial to really identify maybe the values or lessons that you have been taught, or things that have been instilled into you from a young age from your parents that have made you into this human being that is ambitious and confident and has a vision and dreams and wants greater things. And I think that would be really beneficial for the parents listening. So what have you found to be the biggest benefits to put you in the place that you are now?
I don't really know if I understand the question.
Well, like, you know, let's say you grow up and maybe, like for me, let's say my dad was always a dreamer. So I got that from him, I feel like, where I would visualize things into their fullest extent. Like I would visualize I would say I'm a dreamer because my dad taught me to be a dreamer. He taught me to be a hard worker. He taught me, I mean, by leading by example. When I was a kid, my parents they owned their own business, and we would go and hang out at their shop while they cut glass and metal and framed things up until 2 o'clock in the morning. We'd be sleeping in sleeping bags in their office while they were working. They led by example, but taught us hard work. And they taught us that, you know, that is what was necessary to get what you wanted in life. So things like that, like what kind of values, like, you know, I think you've already said one of them, which was, rise above. You know, I think that's a great lesson. So are there other things like that, that someone that is a parent with a kid that's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, any of those transitional years when they're younger could teach their kids that would help them to become, you know, someone like you that's goal-oriented and confident and ambitious?
Yeah, I mean, definitely throughout my life, there's been a lot of, little sayings that have been just kind of like drilled into my brain and that I live by now. One of them being, you know, my dad used to tell me this, and he still tells me this, every night before I go to bed, since I was probably 2 or 3, he said, "Alina, you're an amazing woman. You can do anything if you work hard, try, believe, and never give up." And it's okay. Just like a short little sentence, but, you know, it's pretty much like a key to life.
Yeah.
You know, work hard, try, believe, never give up. It's all you got to do. Make mm-hmm. something happen. And also, never lose your cool.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, I'm pretty opinionated. I'm pretty loud. And it's hard when people are, you know, constantly, you know, questioning your authority or questioning, you know, if you're really, if I'm really, you know, actually doing anything in the company, if this is really, you know, my invention. You know, I grew up to people at my school telling me, "Oh, well, this is her dad's company. They just put her face on the package." And you just gotta never lose your cool. Just say, "No, I work on it every day.
Rise above.
It's what I want to do." So you just gotta never lose your cool. And, you know, because usually the reason you'd be losing your cool is not worth it. Yeah. It's not worth your time, your energy, the oxygen that you would be wasting. And so it's usually just not worth it.
Those are good lessons.
Yeah.
It'll serve you well.
Oh, and of course, this one's a huge one in business, especially, is ask questions. If you don't know, ask.
Yeah.
That kind of goes like right along with never assume, just ask.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I honestly wouldn't even be close to where I am today if I didn't ask questions. If I was stubborn and I just, you know, didn't want to seem like I knew everything.
It would be an insecurity, right? Because you'd be like, "Oh, I don't want to ask because I don't want them to think I don't know."
Exactly, yeah.
It's endearing to ask for help.
It's just, you know, that's what I always tell people, because I feel like, especially adults that are trying to get into business, they're just too afraid to ask. They're too afraid to sacrifice their ego to ask a question. And that's why I think, you know, kids should be in business. Kids should be in business because kids ask questions. Because kids don't care what other people think of them. I mean, especially young kids. They're just like, "I'm doing me," you know?
Yeah. That's a fantastic perspective. High five. I think you've got it figured out pretty well at 14. And you should be very proud of yourself. And
Thank you.
I'm sure your parents are very proud of you.
Oh, you know, I try and make them proud.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Pretty Intense podcast today. I hope you enjoyed it. And also, thank you so much, Trevor Hall, for the awesome music. If you like what you heard today and you want to hear more, please click on the subscribe button.